Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
I'm Susie Yon, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is WBEZ's Weekly News Recap. This week on The Recap, new laws signed in Springfield.
Governor Pritzker has signed new legislation to advance the rights of the LGBTQ plus community in Illinois.
A headache for Kwame Raoul.
Hackers broke into the Illinois Attorney General's computer network.
And some are saying hooray, while others say oy vey.
Big crowds early on at Lollapalooza.
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 Lollapalooza. Festival attendees must also show proof of vaccination or negative COVID test within the last 3 days.
We know that Delta variant is much more contagious than the variants we were seeing a year ago. So while outdoors is safer than indoors, there's a lot of concerns that we're going to see a lot of significant spread from this event.
Here to take us inside the biggest local and state stories of the week are Dan Petrella, state government reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and Paris Schutz, WTTW political correspondent and host of Chicago Tonight. Paris, Dan, welcome back to The Recap.
Thank you, Susie. Good to see you. Thanks for having us.
Well, guys,
they're back.
They're music fans. They're a major revenue source for local business. And they're drunk partiers spreading COVID-19. No matter how you see them, hundreds of thousands are in Chicago for the next 4 days. The festival kicked off the same day Cook County was added to the CDC's list of high transmission areas. Dan, can you get us up to speed on where we are with mask recommendations?
Sure. So earlier this week, the CDC put out new guidelines saying that counties that meet their guidelines for substantial or high transmission of COVID-19, people should be wearing masks indoors, regardless of whether they've been vaccinated or not. At the beginning of the week, when the state announced that they were going to be following those guidelines, only Will County in the Chicago area was meeting the criteria for substantial transmission. The next day, DuPage and McHenry counties joined that list. And yesterday, just as the hordes were descending on Grant Park for Lollapalooza, Cook County was added to that list as well. The city and the state have not put in new universal mask mandates at this point, although late yesterday afternoon, Governor Pritzker did announce that all masks would be required, regardless of vaccination status, at all state facilities.
Well, Paris, what have you been hearing in terms of Lolla crowd sizes? I imagine Grant Park is packed.
I have not been there, Susie. I'm one of those folks that is going to stay away, but I've been looking at the helicopter shots. It certainly looks like the projections of 100,000 people per day will be met. And, I don't know about you or Dan, but I kind of have a bad feeling in the pit of my stomach about where we're all going here with the Delta variant, because I talked to a number of public health experts. There's consensus. Lollapalooza is going to be a spreader event. Yeah. People will get COVID, and the Delta variant at Lollapalooza, it's just a matter of how many. It's not a matter of if. And we see the positivity rates just soaring over the last week in the state. It's over 4% now, when it was under 1% just a few weeks ago. And I just talked with one Chicago alderman that believes that we could see rates in the city approaching 10%. That's the test positivity rate. So all of this together leads me to believe that we're headed toward a really troubling place over the next few weeks.
Yeah, and those breakthrough cases are with those who have been fully vaccinated. Dan, you know, the festival is going on, so tell us about the COVID protocols at Lolla.
Yeah, and it's important to note that the breakthrough cases, I think, are still very, very rare, and it's really mostly the unvaccinated people who are driving all of this. And that's one of the reasons that when you show up to Lollapalooza, you either have to show proof of vaccination or a recent negative COVID test. But, you know, they had originally announced that it was going to be a COVID test within 24 hours before attending the festival. And then over the weeks leading up to the event, it was sort of quietly relaxed to 72 hours. And, you know, there are public health experts that worry that that gives somebody time to get infected between when they get their negative test and when they show up at the gates at Grant Park.
Yeah. Do we have any idea why they made that change, Dan?
Dr. Allison Arwady, the Chicago Health Commissioner, was saying the other day that it's kind of in line with what has been done at other large events, and it's sort of the industry practice right now. You know, there's concern. There was a music festival overseas where about 1,000 people who attended got affected is in the Netherlands, and they had more stringent testing requirements. So it's just a question of, you know, how many cases are we going to see as a result of all these people gathering shoulder to shoulder in Grant Park.
Yeah. And Dan, you know, once folks are in the festival, what do we know about how masks and social distancing is being enforced?
Well, there's no mask requirement. You know, it's an outdoor event. People are being encouraged to wear masks, and I have not been on the ground there, but from the photos I've seen from our photojournalists who are there, there are lots of people packed together not wearing masks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, I think it's just going to be a really big test.
Not only there, Susie, but I mean, like, photos of people, you know, in subway stops, stops, on the metro, just packed together. And it's the indoor areas that are worse. And, you know, Lollapalooza is not the only culprit. There was a concert at the United Center last night, James Taylor, and that's indoors, and that's 18,000 people or 20,000 people. There's, you know, baseball games. So there are a lot of potential super spreader events now as this Delta variant is proven to be much more transmissible than past variants.
Well, besides the hotels and restaurants benefiting from Lolla tourists, pot shops stocked up for the big event, too. Dan, there was some news this week about marijuana store licenses. Can you give us an update?
Yeah, that's right. The state, after pausing issuing new licenses, which we heard about in the intro there at the top of the segment, issued 55 new licenses yesterday, and they're working through this process to try to get more licenses to minority-owned businesses and businesses that are owned by people who have been disproportionately affected by the war on drugs. Mm-hmm. There were some problems with the first round where those folks weren't really getting a shot to get the licenses. So this is the first of three new rounds of lotteries, and they redid the scoring system to try and open it up to more people. And we're going to see if they've been effective at meeting the goals that they set when they legalized marijuana at the beginning of 2020.
Well, we'll keep tabs on that. But let's, for now, move on to some other events of the week. Paris, Chicago's mayor had some good news to publicize. It involved getting workers some sick leave they were owed. What can you tell us about that?
Well, this is about $935,000 in fines and back pay that the two main companies had to pay because they violated the city's paid sick leave ordinance. They did not pay their workers for a certain amount of sick days. They took one of the companies, Mondelez, based on the South Side. You may know some of their products, namely Oreo cookies, mm-hmm. and Trident. And they, in a statement, admitted their culpability and said that they were working with the city to resolve and to get back pay to workers. And then the other company is one of the largest franchises of Burger Kings in the country, or built itself as that. And one of their Burger Kings is located in the 14th Ward, home of Alderman Ed Burke. Ed Burke was accused of, in a federal indictment, of shaking down.
Yeah.
So that company's been in the news. But it is apparently the largest fine levied yet for violating the paid sick leave ordinance. So some workers are going to get some back pay that they were owed.
Mm-hmm. And Dan, in other news, you covered the story this week about some new Illinois laws benefiting the LGBTQ community. Give us the details.
That's right. The governor signed four bills earlier this week, possibly the most notable of which repealed a law that the state passed in the 1980s that criminalized not even transmission of HIV necessarily, but if someone had unprotected sex, someone who's HIV positive and didn't inform their partner, they could be charged with a felony. It also applied to organ and tissue donations and needle sharing. And public health experts, LGBTQ advocates say that this is not an effective way of stopping the spread of the virus, and it's really just stigmatizing people who need medical help rather than, you know, actually taking steps to slow the spread of this epidemic that's been with us for a few decades now. Another bill opens up health insurance for people who have certain health plans. It's about 20% of health insurance plans in the state. Coverage for fertility treatment for same-sex couples, mm-hmm. would be single parents, people who previously were not able to qualify for insurance coverage for that very expensive process. Mm-hmm. And then there's some other stuff having to do with being able to do name changes on marriage certificates when someone legally changes their name, and also removing gendered language like husband and wife from marriage licenses and replacing it with the spouse instead.
In Paris, Illinois, Attorney General Kwame Raoul also made news this week acknowledging that the AG's office was hacked. What do we know there?
Well, it is some ransomware that allegedly is linked to Russian hackers. And what the AG said is it's cost $2.5 million to try and mitigate the problem to their website. And a lot of the services that the AG provides, you have to call or mail now because the website is still down. But what the AG said is they're not going to pay the ransom. The way these ransomware attacks have worked is that they're extracting ransom money, and the AG said, we're not going to do that. The only other thing we know is that the Illinois Auditor General had warned the AG that that their systems were vulnerable to a ransomware attack. This is all under federal investigation.
That's Paris Schutz of WTTW. Also along with us this week on The Recap is Dan Petrella of the Chicago Tribune. Dan, Paris, legendary Chicago pitchman Ron Popeil died this week, so to honor him, I need to say, but wait, there's more.
Here with Anthony Rizzo, Cubs mainstay. Obviously, we just heard the news, traded to the New York Yankees.
The best years of my life have been in Chicago, and it's not like it's really goodbye. I feel like I'll be part of the city forever.
Exelon says it's preparing to dismantle its reactors in Byron and Dresden and notifying the plants of expected job losses that will number in the hundreds.
I'm a Republican. I'm a conservative. But in order to heal from the damage caused that day, we need to call out the facts.
The mayor now confirms the city has reached a tentative contract agreement with a union that represents rank-and-file Chicago police officers.
I shouldn't have walked into office with a contract that was already 2 years expired.
Okay, Paris, we just heard those clips about a new contract for the Chicago police. Would you lay out some of the most important parts of this contract?
Well, it's an 8-year contract, but that includes the 4 years of back pay where the police were operating without a contract. So 4 years past, 4 years going forward, a lump sum, which is somewhere between $300 and $400 million that the city's going to have to pony up right away. And they said they're going to refinance the existing debt to find the money to pay for that. But then it also has reforms that are consistent with the federal consent decree that CPD is still trying to comply with. And some of the more interesting ones, it will allow anonymous complaints against police officers. That's something that the police union was adamantly opposed to. It would also ban having police officers change their statements after a police-involved incident, after they view video. So this came up in the Laquan McDonald case where police officers, you know, made their statements about what happened. Then they go back and look at the video, and then they went and changed their statements. So now they can't do that anymore. And the FOP president, John Catanzara, is urging his members to sign this. But I think it's an open question whether or not they will. I mean, I would assume they likely would. But, you know, he campaigned on being the head of the FOP by saying, look, hell no to some of these reforms. Or if you want any of these reforms, then you're going to have to pay up. If you're the city, you're going to have to give us big raises. So we'll have to see whether the rank and file believes that the raises in here are big enough to justify some of the reforms that they fought against.
Well, Dan, were you surprised to see former mayoral candidate and former CEO of Chicago Public Schools, Paul Vallis, stepping in to help police with negotiations?
I don't know that that's entirely surprising. He's positioned himself as a fiscal watchdog for the city and he's taken on sort of this rabble-rouser role in the last several years. So not too terribly surprised to see that.
Do you think he's signaling something here, maybe wanting to run for office again?
That's outside of my wheelhouse. I'm not really sure. I mean, I suppose it's entirely possible.
Well, in other law enforcement news, a special prosecutor was appointed to look into possible wrongdoing at the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. Paris, what are the details there?
This is the case of Jackie Wilson, who was just released from prison and is suing because of a wrongful conviction. And he was a victim of not only torture under former Area 2 Police Commander John Burge, and basically what he says is He had a coerced confession to a crime he did not commit, a murder he did not commit, because that's the only way he thought he'd get out alive, because he was being tortured. At a subsequent trial, you know, we learned that an assistant state's attorney had allegedly concocted evidence against Wilson to try and frame him. So the special prosecutor is going to go back, 4 decades here, of alleged malfeasance, and, you know, who knows who that could ensnare. I mean, in the early 80s, the Cook County State's Attorney was Richard M. Daley.
Mm-hmm.
So some of this happened under his watch. We don't know if he knew anything about it, because it's an assistant state's attorney here that allegedly, you know, was involved in this wrongdoing, but it could ensnare a lot of people.
Yeah. Dan, Illinois politicians made national news this week. Tell us about how Congressman Adam Kinzinger ended up on the January 6th commission.
Yeah, it's interesting. He stepped in at the last minute after Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, refused to seat two of the Republican appointees. Then the rest, including downstate Congressman Roddy Davis in Taylorville, withdrew from the panel. And Kinzinger agreed with Nancy Pelosi to take a seat on the panel. You know, he's been really one of the few outspoken Republicans in Congress on this issue, putting it at odds with much of the rest of his party, putting him in interesting territory for thinking about what his political future is here in Illinois.
Dan, remind us where his district is and what, you know, knowing where his district is, what that could mean of him being on this commission.
Sure. He's from Shanahan. He's kind of in an exurban sort of far outskirts of the Chicago area is where his district starts. And we're losing one congressional seat in remapping before the next election. So, you know, there's speculation about whether his district is going to be carved up to put some of the more Democratic leaning areas to shore up some Democratic districts, because it's the Democrats who control the state legislature who draw the map. And so question whether he's going to lose his district or be drawn into a district that favors Democrats. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been speculation a little bit about whether he might run for governor, but, you know, to do that, he would have to win a Republican primary, sort of putting himself at odds with a big part of the core base of the party right now.
Yeah. Well, Paris, what was your reaction to what you heard from Kinzinger this week?
He was clearly emotional in the testimony. It was clearly he wanted to be on this panel, and then House Speaker Pelosi put him on, announced that on Sunday. And I do remember talking to Kinzinger on the night of January 6th. You know, we did a Zoom interview from the Capitol, and he was clearly shaken. I mean, clearly, I think it's authentic how emotional he feels about what happened that day and the need to get to the bottom of it, and his anger at some of the whitewashing of it in his own party. So, yeah, this has been a crusade for Kinzinger, and I think he knows politically that he doesn't have much to lose. You know, he's on the opposite of his party. His district might be redrawn so that he can't win in it again. And so he feels that this is necessary for the preservation of democracy to really get to the root of what happened that day.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dan, let's move to another story you covered this week about a powerful power company threatening to close some nuclear plants. Tell us more about that.
That's right. This is not entirely surprising news. Exelon, which is the parent company of Commonwealth Edison and the owner of the nuclear plants in the state, said a year ago that they plan to shut down their Byron plant near Rockford and their Dresden plant in Grundy County near Morris if they didn't get state subsidies to help them compete with fossil fuel burning power plants. You know, the initial announcement came a month after ComEd had admitted in federal court that they were engaged in this years-long bribery scheme to try to advance their legislative agenda in Springfield. And so it was sort of a tricky political situation for lawmakers and the governor to try and negotiate a way to keep these plants open, preserve a couple thousand high-paying union jobs at the power plants, but also not appear to be giving a handout to a powerful, profitable company mm-hmm. who had a subsidiary who had just, you know, admitted in federal court to engaging in these nefarious deeds mm-hmm. to get what they wanted out of the state. So this week Exelon filed notice with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in Washington that they are moving ahead with plans to decommission the plant.
Well, what do you think the chances are of the stalled clean energy bill being voted on anytime soon in Springfield?
Sort of like a game of chicken, is Exelon really going to go forward and shut down these plants, or can they reach?
Dan, isn't there also talk of federal money in the bipartisan infrastructure bill being proposed to go toward nuclear plants like those two?
There is, yes, and there's questions about you know, whether Washington is going to come through with help. From Exelon's point of view, they don't think anything is going to happen in Washington fast enough to change their timeline on decommissioning these plants. But there's some, you know, thought among some in Springfield, you know, why should we do this for Exelon when Washington mm-hmm. might come in and help them? We don't have to wear the jacket for helping this company after what their subsidiaries have admitted to in court.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to round out the recap a little bit with sports. Let's turn to baseball. The trade deadline is at midnight tonight, and the core of the World Series winning Cubs team is being dismantled. Break the news to us, Paris. What have the Cubs done?
Anthony Rizzo, one of the greatest players to ever put on that blue pinstripe uniform, is gone. Mm. He has reportedly been traded to the Yankees for two prospects, and he was the leader of the team that won the first World Series for the Cubs in over a century. So he will always go down as one of the greatest Cubs of all time. And, I think he still has some good years left. Clearly the Cubs are sellers this year. They had an 11-game losing streak. They're not contenders for anything. They want to rebuild. I don't understand why they couldn't keep the core of Rizzo, Bryant, and Javier Baez together and build around that. I mean, it seems you needed to fill in some pieces around there every year, namely with a good leadoff hitter, which they didn't have after Dexter Fowler, and with pitching, and they just didn't do it. I think it's disappointing for Cubs fans. I mean, wonderful memories. As he said, he'll always be part of Chicago Cub history with Ron Santo and Ernie Banks and Ryan Sandberg. I mean, he's going to be up there on the Mount Rushmore, but disappointing that that Cubs fans couldn't get a few more years out of this core.
I mean, he's just an all-around good guy, too.
And an all-around great guy with his work with the Lurie Children's Hospital and child cancer. I mean, everywhere you look, you know, he's doing another good thing, and he's just, by all accounts, a terrific role model and a great part of the fabric of this city. And so as he said, he'll be back. He'll always be a part of the city.
Yeah. Well, of course, baseball is about memories and heart, but in the end, it's business.
It's a business. It's a bottom line.
That's true. Dan, would you be as vicious? Would you have done this trade?
Well, Jed Hoyer clearly knows way more about baseball than I do. It's hard. I think we as fans have that tie to the past, that sense of nostalgia. You know, we fall in love with these players. Rizzo is a great guy. A little bit disappointed to find out that he was one of the players who declined to get vaccinated. I think maybe he could have set a better example for folks there. But, you know, they have to think about the future. And you know, as a fan, it is sad that with these great players, some of the best Cubs teams in memory, they only were able to win one World Series. But, you know, just before we jumped on, I watched the video of Bryant throwing to Rizzo for the final out of the 2016 World Series, and it brought a smile to my face again. And I think that's, you know, what a lot of people in Chicago will think about when they think about Anthony Rizzo for years and years to come.
That's Dan Petrella, state government reporter for the Chicago Tribune, and Paris Schatz, WTTW political correspondent and host of Chicago Tonight. Thanks for joining us today. And that's this week's recap. Want to go beyond the headlines of the biggest local and state stories of the week? Make sure you're subscribed to the Reset podcast. I'm Susie Ahn. Sasha is back on Monday. Until then, thanks for being here with me, and we'll catch you back here soon. Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.